Welcome to the latest podcast. I am your host, JP John Paz. With me, of course, is the special guest. He is a former WWF head writer, former WCW head writer, former WCW World Heavyweight Champion. He is Mr. Vince Russo. Vince, welcome back. How are you doing?
I am doing great, John. How are you?
The topic at hand, Over the Edge 1998, the buy rate is down a little bit, but it is on the 31st of May from Milwaukee, Wisconsin at the Wisconsin Center Arena. I mean, it is kind of a weird Memorial Day weekend. Sometimes you're not going to get the greatest pay-per-view audience during a big weekend like that. Over 9,800 people, and the buy rate was 203,000. I say that because then you go to King of the Ring, and you jump up at 100-plus thousand buys the next month. Does that scare you at all? That it was
bro, I think a lot of it at this point is, bro, we're still in second place. I really think a lot of it, bro, is what was WCW's pay-per-view? If WCW at that point had a bigger match or a better card they were more interested in, I think it was going to hurt the buy rate.
WCW Slamboree 1998, which did have Hogan on the card, did 275,000 buys. So, I mean, that does hurt you a little bit.
Yeah.
And Hogan didn't do all the pay-per-views then either. So I know me as a fan, I was like, oh, shit, you know, I got to get this pay-per-view. Hogan's on the show.
Yeah.
I know it technically wasn't the main event. It was kind of a weird card, but still 275 and then another 200. That's 400 plus thousand pay-per-view buys combined. So
yeah,
it's a lot of pay-per-views to be bought. I just have a quick question for you,
and it was that you did some announcing for WWF. How did that come about? Why were you an announcer? What were you doing announcing for?
Because the WWE was so hot at that time, like everybody wanted to be in business with us. And there was a show that was just based in New York. You only got it in New York. So when I was doing the Vic Venom gimmick and all that stuff, being a New Yorker, they thought that I would be good for that show. Bro, I knew nothing about commentating, play-by-play, like nothing at all. And bro, like, I'll be honest with you, like, bro, people send me stuff and I'm like, I don't even remember doing it. So like, people have been sending me some of these things and yeah, man, I did it. You know, I don't remember what I did specifically, but I do remember I had a good time doing it.
Yeah, it's just funny looking back. It's like, wow, you know, all these different commentators, like, wow, Russo's popping up as a commentator for Shotgun Saturday Night.
Yeah,
but did you have any experience?
I had no experience.
Nothing. Well, yeah, just doing my vicious Vincent's World of Wrestling. But see, bro, like, I swear to God, like, something like that, I would probably be open to and interested in, like, doing something like that, even before writing or being an on-air character or anything like that, man. Because, I think I know how to get people over. I think I know how to tell stories.
What'd you think about Shotgun Saturday Night?
I hated it.
Can I tell you why I hated it? It was so brutal, John, and you will appreciate this. You know, bro, you got to understand, at the time, I got my wife, I got three young kids, okay? I'm working my ass off Monday through Friday, okay? Bro, then Saturday comes, and now I got to drive from the island into the city.
Oh.
And now I got to do that Shotgun Saturday Night and then drive home after it, bro. And oh my God, I absolutely, absolutely hated that experience. Thank God, man, it did not last that long.
That is brutal. Just the traffic and
brutal, bro. Brutal, man. The last place you want to head from Long Island is into Manhattan on a Saturday night. That's the last place you want to be.
What'd you think about the actual show? Did you like the way the show was done?
No, not at all.
Seems like your kind of show, though. You know what I mean? Just like kind of Wild West.
Well, that's definitely like the direction we were heading in, but I did not write those shows.
So even though you're on commentating, you have nothing to do with creative?
No, not at all.
Wow, interesting.
So as far as the Over the Edge pay-per-view, this is pretty awesome build-up because Dude Love and Austin are going to fight in the main event, but not only they're going to fight in the main event, you got to kind of keep stacking the deck. You can't just do status quo because then it's like, oh, of course Austin's going to beat Dude Love. Oh, wait a second. Vince is getting involved, and this is the first time this ever happened. His two stooges are getting involved. Undertaker is getting involved.
Oh, yeah. It's always, bro, you got to get people to watch. And this is what always drew me as a wrestling fan. In order to get people to watch, bro, the question always has to be, how are they going to get out of this?
Yep.
That was a question I always asked myself as a wrestling fan. You don't see that anymore, bro. You don't see that type of booking anymore. So what you're saying is 1,000% correct, John. You're buying this to see how are they going to get out of this.
But as you're watching, you don't think like, oh, how's he going to get out? You're like, he needs to get out of this. You know what I mean? Because you're rooting for him.
That's when wrestling is at its best, bro. When you don't know how they're going to book it.
Dude Love, who's like hell bent on winning the title and kissing Vince's ass, and he's got the Stooges. I mean, it was just really, really, it was great TV at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you, bro. And like I said, it's the formatting of the show. That's not Vince Russo's great. That's, as a writer, I knew how to format the show. Like any writer knows how to format a show, bro. And that really has a lot to do with it.
So how did you kind of learn about formatting and stuff? Is that just learning it through doing it, or like, is that something you studied or?
Nah, not at all, bro. It was just because the shows were going head to head. And when I sat down to write every show, my mentality was I can't get them to turn the channel, because if they turn the channel and there's something going on at WCW, we're going to lose them. If you're going to commercial break, bro, you got to go with something big so they come back. You can't lose a single viewer to WCW. That's how I wrote the show.
You don't want to miss anything. You can't.
Right. Exactly, bro. Exactly.
The first match coming out here, LOD 2000, which of course Hawk and Animal with their new look with Draws and Sonny versus the DOA Disciples of Apocalypse, 8-Ball and Skull with Chains. This tag team match goes 10 minutes. LOD 2000 gets the victory thanks to a little cheating by Draws. So what's going on here with LOD 2000?
Going into this, bro, it makes all the sense in the world. Because DOA were winning a lot of their matches by doing the old switcheroo. So now Draws gets involved.
An LOD win.
Bro, I think, honestly, man, the root of the problem was, I think it was twofold, bro. I think Hawk was having a lot of problems with substance abuse at the time. I think Sonny was doing a lot of bitching and complaining about Sable. And they had a guy like Draws that they didn't know what to do.
Right.
So it's, you wind up putting all these people together just to give people something to do.
Yep.
But I'll be honest with you, bro. I think The Office, when I say The Office, I really mean coming down from Vince. I kind of think it was a punishment with Hawk and what he was going through at the time. It was a punishment with Sonny. They were never going to be featured again. They were never going to be over. So if we just took their past history and can use that to get other people over, I think that's the point they were at this time.
So were you actually going to get rid of Hawk and just have Draws and Animal be LOD 2000?
I think that's the way they thought it was going to turn out, that Hawk was going to do that himself. I really believe that that's the way that Vince thought it was going to turn out.
So after that match, after LOD wins, thanks to Draws, so a little intrigue there with LOD 2000. It's like, wait, Draws is cheating. They're kind of not liking him, the Sonny thing. So it's at least something is going on with LOD after having a bit of a losing streak to the Outlaws for a while.
Yeah.
So then The Rock comes out, cuts a promo, making fun of the Milwaukee audience. Farouk comes out and attacks him, beats him up with a chair. Commissioner Sergeant Slaughter said, Farouk and Rock do have a match later on tonight, and it will happen. Despite any injury, the match must happen. So a little intrigue there, because it seems like that's a way to write Rock, who's the heel champion, off. But Slaughter says, no, the match will happen. Any sort of significance? Do you remember, like, why doing that? Just a little tease, maybe?
I'd rather the crowd think they're effed and then you give it to them, because right. then there's a double pop. You know what I'm saying? Yes. We're like, yes. oh, crap, this match ain't going to happen. And sort of comes out, no, this match is happening. Now you get an even bigger pop.
So next matchup, Jeff Jarrett with Tennessee Lee defeating Steve Blackman in about 10 minutes here. The finish comes when Tennessee Lee cheats, hits Blackman with the cane, and Jarrett pins him for the win. Any sort of like intrigue here, or are you just trying to give Jarrett a nice little heel push with Tennessee Lee? I mean, what's going on here with this feud and this match?
Bro, the one thing that always held Blackman back was just the lack of charisma. You got to be equipped on both sides. And bro, like Robert Fulton was freaking awesome as Tennessee Lee. Like he was so good, bro. I mean, it was unbelievable. And of course, Jeff was always a great, great, great heel. So at this point, Jeff is probably more valuable as a heel to get more baby faces over. If Tennessee Lee cheats, it's not really going to hurt Blackman. So I think that was probably the thinking going in.
But is it thought of like he's an upper mid-carder, main event?
Nah, bro, I'll be honest with you, bro. That was really me pushing for a friend. I don't think Vince was ever a fan of Jeff Jarrett. And, bro, I think a lot of it has to do with there was a lot of Jerry Jarrett baggage, like Pritchard. And Patterson would make fun of Jerry Jarrett like nonstop. They were instrumental in getting the dude fired. And here's why, bro. This is how wrestling always works. And this is why some of that stank rubbed off on Jeff, because the rumor was, bro, Jerry Jarrett was brought in while Vince was going through the steroid trial. And the thought was that Jerry Jarrett was going to kind of replace Vince if Vince had done any jail time. So what happened, bro? Vince brought Jerry Jarrett in over Bruce and Pat. Did the same exact thing with Cowboy Bill Watts. Same thing, bro. I witnessed it twice. And what do Patterson and Briscoe do? They get freaking Jarrett and Bill Watts fired. That's what you do, bro. So whatever they told Vince, Vince bought, Vince believed, Jerry Jarrett was fired, and now Jeff's got a little bit of that stench on him where Vince McMahon sees him in just a certain role, and he's only going to go so far.
So the third match, probably your favorite of the evening, Mark Merrow versus a mystery opponent who will be chosen via Sable. So Sable said she will choose the mystery partner, except she came out and says, no, I do not need a man to do it. I'm going to do it myself. I am my own mystery opponent. So she is going to wrestle Mark Merrow. Merrow says, well, wait a second here. I know you're saying you don't need a man to fight you, but you're insisting this, like that you could do your fight yourself, but I'm just going to lay down and let you win. So he lays down, tricks her, pins her, beats her. Now that she lost, she's forced to leave the WWF. So not only did he screw her, he purposely beat her and lied to her because he wanted to get rid of her anyway because she's taking his spotlight. Pretty good writing here.
Bro, I'm going to tell you this. Forget about the writing. And I appreciate that, John. Forget about the writing, because every time I see Merrow on TV with Sable, bro, throughout the entire Attitude Era, he had to be the most underrated guy. His performances, bro, with Sable were phenomenal, bro. The role that he played and the heat that he got, which turned to her being over massively. I mean, Mark was handing it over to his wife like on a silver platter. He was doing it all for Sable. It got him heat with the boys, bro, because they didn't like a woman being so over. And man, no doubt in my mind, the most underrated performer during that era, without a shadow of a doubt.
You did not like him taking that powerbomb, though, even though it was his idea?
No, not me. The boys in the back hated it, bro. I didn't have a problem with it whatsoever.
This was a funny swerve because you're like, wow, the husband, maybe he actually is going to be nice for once. Like, oh, maybe Mero's not that much of a dick. And then he pins her. He really is that much of a dick. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he was hated at this point, too.
He was so good at what he did, bro. He was so good, bro.
Ever any thought of giving him a bigger push, like more towards the main event or no?
I think because she was so hated and the boys were kind of taking it out on him. I don't want to say the boys, but like one huge, huge, huge main eventer was in Vince's ear about Sable all the time. And because of that, that was going to feed back down to Mark. And Mark was never going to get his just due. Again, bro, these are the things in wrestling that unless you're there and see it for yourself, you just don't think these things exist.
Next match, Kai and Tai, Dick Togo, Men's Tao, and Sho Funaki with Yamaguchi-san defeated Justin Hawk Bradshaw and Takemi Shinoku in a handicap match in just about 10 minutes. Actually, a pretty good match here. The end, of course, Dick Togo with the advantage here. He ends up pinning Takemi Shinoku.
I hated all this, bro. This is a deal they got with New Japan or whoever. This turned into a big Vince Russo is racist when all that I said was, as a writer, it is very difficult to get foreign-speaking athletes over because there is a communication gap, and the shoe is on the other foot with United States wrestlers wrestling in Japan. When a fan can't understand the language, there's going to be a barrier. That's what I said. So you got a case here, bro, where you've got three Japanese guys and none of them can speak English. Now, they have a manager and that really helps. But how in God's name are you going to get these three individuals over at the same time when cutting promos is taking out of the arsenal? Yeah, but this was business and this was the deal with Japan. So I went along with the flow and I wrote it.
Next up, The Rock defeats Farouk in about 5 minutes to retain his WWF Intercontinental Championship. It was funny because before the match started, they gave him the 10 count. He wouldn't come out. Commissioner says, if you don't come out, I'm just going to strip you of the title and give it to Farouk. So he comes out with a neck brace, like, come on, I'm hurt. What are you doing here? So he tries to get out. So another little swerve, kind of trying to tease that he might lose because he's hurt. Of course, he ends up rolling up Farouk when he was distracted, kind of cheats, and gets the roll-up win to retain the title here. Just classic heel stuff for The Rock. You think he might lose, and you guys kind of pull it away. He retains the title.
I just hate because Farouk did a run-in. I'm just like, why are we still using that ridiculous name?
Yeah, why not Ron Simmons?
I don't know. I don't know, bro. When they kicked him out, it should have became Ron Simmons immediately. I guess trademark, you know, and all that BS with Vince, I guess that had a lot to do with it.
Next matchup, Kane with Paul Bearer defeats Big Van Vader in a mask versus mask match. Match goes about 7 minutes, 20 seconds here. Kane, of course, gets the victory with the tombstone, gets a nice little win over a pretty big star. But the only thing is mask versus mask. It's kind of weird because we know what Vader looks like.
Bro, because I'm saying to myself, why is Vader wearing that? Like, it's so ridiculous that he was wearing it. So maybe this was a way for him to take that off. But yeah, I agree 100%, bro. Pretty lame stipulation.
And remember, he called himself a fat piece of shit. Remember, he was
And you know why? Because The Office was probably telling him that over and over and over and over and over again.
Is this just something for Kane to do in the meantime?
Absolutely.
Next matchup, six-man tag match here. The Nation, D'Lo Brown, Kamu Mustafa, and Owen Hart with Mark Henry on the outside defeated D-Generation X, Billy Gunn, Road Dogg, and Triple H with China and X-Pac on the outside. The match actually went 18 minutes and 30 seconds, so long match here, and the finish comes with a little cheating, a little chicanery, and Owen Hart gets the pinfall on Triple H after Triple H beat him for months. But just a funny thing that Owen Hart is in the Nation, and the Nation's getting a win here.
Yeah, and we did a lot of things with this program. Bro, I was always looking to do things differently and get outside of the arena, okay? I'll never forget, bro, the one thing that DX poo-pooed, okay, was I wanted the nation to challenge DX to like a flag football game. We were at like Penn State or something, bro. It was like a legendary field. And I wanted to have this football game going on throughout the show. And bro, I'll never forget, like, DX shit on it and they wouldn't do it because you had legitimate football players on the nation. And bro, like, let's face it. Do you think X-Pac ever played football in his life or Triple H? Bro, these guys were stud athletes, but it just didn't look like football was their game. Aside from Billy Gunn, I could believe Billy played football, but that was the only thing, bro, I think they ever turned down.
What about Owen and the Nations?
It's really weird, bro. And while I was watching it happen, man, I was still trying to think of, like, I know it was an uphill battle getting Owen over as a babyface. It was just really, really hard, bro, because there was really a thing of him being in Brett's shadow. Even when Brett wasn't there, there was always that stigma. So I think somehow, some way, man, we just wanted to get him back on the heel side.
Then we got the main event of the evening. Awesome match here. Stone Cold Steve Austin defeats Dude Love in a Falls Count Anywhere match for the WWF World Heavyweight Championship. Match goes about 22 minutes, 30 seconds. Thing is here, not only is he fighting Dude Love, but Vince McMahon. Mr. McMahon is a special guest referee. Pat Patterson is a special guest ring announcer. Gerald Briscoe is the special guest timekeeper. And Undertaker's out there being the special guest enforcer as well, keeping things. So, I mean, man, this thing breaks down. Just the chemistry with Austin and Foley is awesome. Like, they always had great matches. Even the month before, and Unforgiven was awesome. Yeah. But there's so much going on in this match because sometimes you can, like, do a little bit of overbooking. But I feel like this was perfect because the crowd was hot for everything.
Look at who you got laying out the match. Everybody you just listed. Bro, you got Vince, Austin, Mick, Patterson, Briscoe. You got all these unbelievable minds laying out that match. Think about that. How could it not be a masterpiece?
So true. And the end is crazy because then Briscoe gets beat up. Patterson gets beat up by Undertaker. They're both trying to cheat. Vince is trying to cheat. I mean, Dude Love takes a chair and wallops Vince. I mean, no hand up. I mean, he just destroys Vince by accident. Austin hits Dude Love with a stunner. There's no ref. He's unconscious. He takes McMahon's hand and he counts to three. So Undertaker looks at Mark Eaton. He's like, you better ring that bell. He just won. And they ring the bell and Austin wins. And how could Vince kind of fight it? He was unconscious at the time, but he did count to three after Austin stunner Dude Love. So, I mean, this was great.
And, bro, you probably would not have been able to build something like that with anyone other than Vince. I mean, absolutely without a shadow of a doubt. He was such a great performer. Patterson and Briscoe, those guys were just great at what they did, man. You know, they were great at what they did. Let me make one thing perfectly clear. The laying out of that match, I have nothing to do with. And we started off the show this way. The fun is really coming up with how we're going to get out of this. So when I'm sitting at Vince's house, we're coming up with Austin taking the hand, 1, 2, 3. We're coming up with that. How do you get out of this in a way where the audience is not going to shit on it?
So would you write something like, for instance, this and be like, all right, I'm writing this, Austin, Vince is the ref, blah, blah. And then Austin is saying, let's do this. Or is it just a collab? Everybody's kind of throwing in.
Now we're kind of coming up with the finish during the week. And bro, at this point, it's me and Vince. So it's literally like me and Vince coming up with that finish. We let Austin and Mick and everybody involved know the finish. So now they have a couple of days, bro, where even on that plane ride, they're thinking about how to get to the finish. That's the beauty, bro. You know, you hear so much about TV written the day of or being changed the day of. we wrote this show in a timely manner that these guys were thinking about the show by Thursday. Now they're thinking about it. They're on the plane. They may be calling each other. By the time you got to that building, Patterson had ideas. Briscoe, Mick, Steve, Vince, because they knew what the finish was going to be. And that's the importance, bro, of getting the show written in a timely manner.
Yeah, because as a fan, you're thinking like, wait a second, McMahon, there's no way he's going to count three. Like, Austin can't win. Yeah,
absolutely. Yep. Yeah. So coming up with a finish and then figuring out, okay, bro, how do we have this make sense? And you know that's going to go down a whole other path on TV the next night. You know that.
So what do you think overall the show? How would you grade it?
Nothing is perfect, bro, but I got to say it's up there at an 8 or a 9.
This was great to me anyway. It's funny when people go back and they watch it, like living it and watching it, it's completely different. It's great because you're sucked into Austin McMahon and what is this guy going to try to screw Austin with over with next? I mean, he's like the ultimate blue collar, putting his work boots on guy. You're like, you're rooting for this guy and this asshole rich billionaire is screwing him over every week.
And how simple is that concept?
Black and white. It's perfect.
Black and white, bro. Yep. Black and white. Simple.
All right. Let's wrap it up. Head towards the plugs.
Yeah, guys, check out russosbrand.com because like I said, man, we've remained $4.95 a month forever. We've never raised prices. I think if you were a fan of the Attitude Era, you'd love this show. Check it out. russosbrand.com.
You follow me on Twitter and Instagram at @2manpowertrip. Check out the website, tmptempire.com. Thank you so much, Vince. Thank you, everybody out there, for listening. See you right back here next time. Have a good one, folks. Today's episode of the podcast is brought to you by A Wrestling Historian. Follow A Wrestling Historian on Instagram for your latest dose of pro wrestling history. Follow A Wrestling Historian on Instagram today.